the fuck is a burrito? I'm eating a donkey? I was like, I'm eating a little donkey? Why are these things called little donkeys?
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Thank you for joining me again on another episode of Far Betterment, the podcast where we learn new things about old friends and old things about new friends. In this episode, I'm joined by Chef Edwin Sandoval, owner and curator of Catrucho. Catrucho is a unique food experience, private gourmet, and very carefully curated foods, and a carefully curated staff. In this episode, Chef Sandoval talks a little bit about how he's trying to change the food industry and the experience for employees, chefs, people like that. Chef Sandoval was introduced to me by a close friend of mine, Corey, who's also been on the podcast before. And I was lucky enough to get a little bit of Chef Sandoval's time, especially since he has such a busy schedule. But without further ado, Chef Sandoval for Far Betterment. Yeah, because I was actually looking at some of the, I looked at the bio and everything that you sent me, and then I will admit, I kind of Googled you a little bit and Googled Catrucho, is how you say it, is that right?
Yeah.
I don't want to butcher it.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Good job, man. You did fantastic. I never heard somebody say it, but like the first try correctly.
Oh, hey, man. I grew up speaking Spanish, so I have a little bit of an advantage, but
there you go, thanks.
I had never, like, I definitely did my research because I was like, I don't want to butcher this. So
that's awesome.
I guess we've kind of already started, but like, I kind of want you to tell me a little bit about, like, I think the concept's very, very cool and very interesting. I really like the gourmet private food idea. Like, I think that's incredible. How did you come up with that and how did you start?
And honestly, I sort of fell into it. I knew, for a while that I wanted, that just becoming an executive chef at a restaurant wasn't necessarily my entire goal. And I mean, you know, my cooking career started like really, really early. When I was 14, my sister was married to the chef at the time, and he just kind of called me up one day. He was like, hey, man, I know you're only 14 years old, but we can tell people at the restaurant that you're 16, and I need somebody to come and like help me, you know, like get through the service. Mm-hmm. Apparently, like the dishwasher of the day didn't show up. So for me, that was just like a blessing. I was like, oh yeah, I get to go and like make some money. And that's sort of like where the whole cooking started. But, you know, 2 years later, when I was 21, I decided that I wanted to leave Colorado Springs and actually move to Denver, and I kind of like hopped around different restaurants, you know, and every time I just felt like the restaurant business was just essentially the same thing, just a different place in a different crowd, but mm-hmm. the environment was exactly the same, you know, somewhere where, you know, people don't necessarily look at you as somebody that is helping their business and, you know, helping them achieve their goal. It's more or less like, hey, look, you come in, you clock out, you get your stuff done, and we'll see you tomorrow. You know, there wasn't like a really good connection. And some of the things that I always wanted to do as a chef was to like really be involved in the process of, you know, choosing my products, choosing the people that I wanted to work with, and making sure that I was in control of the variables that I knew were going to make me and continue to make me happy in the cooking world. And I think I was 22, 23 the very first time that I did a couple of private gigs. And it's funny because like it all kind of ties up to where I'm at right now. This guy from an underground supper club that is called Silver Spork, ended up contacting the bartender of the restaurant where I was working at on South Broadway here in Denver, which is called Beatrice and Woodsley. So the guy comes up to me and he says, hey, look, I'm doing this two private dinners in a couple of months, and I want you to be the chef. I kind of started doing my research, you know, on like the Silver Spork idea, and I came up to him a couple of weeks later, and I was like, hey, man, I was like, I looked this thing up, but it sounds like you might be, you know, better off taking the chef. That seems like the trend that they're doing. It was, you know, more or less a bartender and the chef from whatever restaurant would take over and for like a 7-course meal and 7 different cocktails. But he's like, hey man, he's like, I don't know how to tell you this, but he's like, I like your food better. And I was like, don't say anymore. Let's not put ourselves in a weird spot with, you know, with the kitchen management. I was like, I'll help you out. So we go and do this 2 events, and then 7 courses one night, 7 different courses the next night, Friday, Saturday night, sort of back to back. And this guy was like, hey man, I want to be, you know, in contact with you for other events later on down the road. And literally about 2 years ago, he called me up and he's like, hey, I need a chef for this Invisible City thing that I'm putting together. And I think it would be perfect. And essentially, here we are, you know. And it's crazy because I actually used to do, you know, after that, doing those 2 events back to back, I felt like I was very, I was essentially like very tickled by the idea of doing private cooking. So that's when I was like, man, I need to get out of kitchen management and I need to do my own thing. And I started doing pop-up dinners out of my house. I think the very first one that I did was more or less me figuring out and getting comfortable with my cooking style. So I just had people come over and eat for free. And then, you know, the next time I did it, it was like, hey guys, come over, maybe just throw me $20 so I can cover my costs. And then it was 60, and then it was 65. And, you know, I would fill up my dining room at my house, which to me was incredible. You know, to have 15, 20 people just sitting there and, you know, out of my my duplex kitchen, was doing like 7 courses with wines and all these crazy things. And yeah, now that we're here, you know, where people are essentially getting, you know, great experiences and just, you know, really delivering a kitchen and a chef driven sort of concept and bringing it to them and saying, hey, look, this is what I do. And for me, what I love about that is that it's very, very grassroots, I would say.
I would agree. I don't know a whole lot about it, or, you know, and I don't want people to get confused with, you know, thinking that it's a catering business or anything like that, because it really isn't. It's an experience, for what I've seen. And I think that's the thing that really sets you apart. But in your opinion, what sets you apart, you know, I think you covered a little bit. But really, and, yeah, what sets you apart from everything, from everyone else?
You know, and I think is that that's the point that you're making, you know, because for me, you know, when I talk to people, especially at the very beginning, like 2 years ago when I was starting this concept, they were like, well, that sounds a lot like catering. And for me, it was just like, well, it really does. And I was like, how do I make myself, you know, how do I take a step ahead of those people?
Absolutely.
And, you know, for me, and not to ever, you know, disrespect anybody else or a big catering company, but I know that they're not taking the time to really, you know, put menus together for people. And like, one of the things that I love doing is, if anybody wants to do anything with me, I have to have that like face-to-face sort of contact and like really hear it from them and say, hey, what is it that you want? And, you know, I don't send people menus to choose from. I send them sample menus and I'm like, hey, look, these are things in menus that I've done in the past. Look through them so you get a better idea of my cooking style. And then we just meet and we just get together and we say, hey, look, I want such and such thing. And these are the, you know, these are the cuisines that I love. And then for me, it's just as well, just having a really good connection with the people that I source my ingredients from, you know, and just being able to go to the farm and say, hey, this is my order for tomorrow, but please do me a favor. Just don't pick anything for me. I'll be there tomorrow. And you know, I love getting up early, going to the farm and saying, cool, I'm going to pick up my carrots, my beets, you know, my herbs. And for me, that's kind of the connection that I wanted to make with food. And I think that's what really sets me apart, is that personal touch with people and really giving them exactly what they want. And even though we're growing at a rapid pace, I would say, I think it's still pretty nice for us to just try to give people, you know, a custom menu. Like the menus that I've done, you know, every event is different. And for me, I think that's what makes an event special, is for someone to say, yeah, I had my own menu and nobody else is going to get that menu ever again. You know, and I think that's pretty cool.
I actually really like that. You can really see the passion and how much you enjoy the personability of that and the experience that you put together. Where did that passion come from or, you know, the passion for food, and what do you love specifically about food that makes you want to do it every day?
You know, I think the passion for food has always sort of been there for me. You know, like I said, I grew up in Honduras, and you know, like food was like one of those things that always brought people together. You know, I remember as a child, like we had chickens and pigs, and we had like all these mango trees in our house and avocado trees. So it was always like, you know, I would see where the food came from. And when I came to the States, I feel like that this connection started to take place, where I was just like, well, where is all this things coming from? You know, especially, you know, growing up in here in the States, after I came here, I think I was like 11 or something like that. And, you know, I just saw kids like eating hamburgers and pizza and all these crazy things in the cafeteria. And for me, it was just like, this is not what I'm used to, you know, and I always wanted to go back and dig, you know, through the culture that I was coming from. But at the same time, it you know, like the restaurant business itself had, or the restaurant industry had a lot to do with that, because, you know, I think like 10 or 5, 8 years ago is when, you know, like all the chefs start getting like really famous, and you see a lot of people being, you know, featured on TV and a lot of cooking shows, and they start talking about like how, you know, how they approach food. And for me, I felt like I needed to figure out a way that I had that connection with food. And I think it all became out of more of desperation to really make sure that I was always doing what I loved and finding ways to make sure that I stayed in love with cooking, you know. And one of the things that I never really got to do while working in restaurants was, you know, go to the farmer, to the farms, and say, you know, talk to the people that were growing this thing and feel how passionate they sell. And I think now that I get to do that pretty much on a consistent basis, you know, it almost feeds my passion by seeing the passion that the people that I source food from have as well, you know, for them to be excited and say, hey, look, let me show you this, you know, this bell peppers. Let me show you this thing that I've been working on, and check out this, you know, this different herb. And for me, immediately my wheels just start turning. I'm like, oh my God, I can make this and that and this other thing with what this person is talking about. And I think that's kind of the, you know, the main drive for me on when it comes down to cooking.
You know, it seems it's more like art for you. Like you're more in love with the creation and the sourcing and, you know, obviously the cooking, but that all stems from the creation. Would you agree that it's kind of artistic for you? And why would you think, or why, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, and honestly, that is, I feel like you did your research. You really went in. I love it. But yeah, honestly, I feel exactly the same. I think for me, for the longest time, I felt like I wasn't a creative person. I felt like, okay, I didn't know how to draw. Like, you know, my penmanship is absolute garbage. And, you know, I literally draw stick figures, and not as much as I can do when it comes to being, you know, an artist. But I started to realize
same
that.
Same here. No worries there.
But I realized that when I was putting food on the plate, to me, the thing that always stood out was, you know, like the negative space and like making sure that the colors were, you know, were cohesive, that the textures were coming together, and like what the experience was when you take the very first bite, you know. And I think for me, when I create my menus, I always think about like, you know, colors, textures, you know, how are these things going to make people feel? And I think after I figured out that I wasn't good at any other source or, you know, form of being an artist, I was like, being a chef is my artsy way of expressing myself. I was like, I put a lot of emotion, and I put a lot of thought and a lot of care into what I do, that, you know, I just started seeing, you know, things were a little under a different light. And even when I invite people over to my, you know, to my kitchen at Invisible City, I tell them, I'm like, hey, look, you're not coming into a kitchen. You're coming into my art studio. This is like where I get to create things, you know. And I just look at, I try to look at my cooking a little different. And I think that's sort of one of the things that has been able to keep, you know, keep me going, because I feel that it's not work. I don't look at it as, oh man, I got to go in. You know, I got to go develop this menu for 200 people, or I have to make this, you know, 15-person, you know, private event. It's more like, oh my God, I get to go make 5 different, you know, artsy pieces that people are going to eat.
No,
that's I kind of tried to approach it now.
I actually think that's really cool, and I really love like hearing your passion for it. It's like really inspiring, and I actually really love what you said about how cooking is like an emotion for you. So, what would be like your most I don't know, emotional or I guess like your most emotional dish. What's like your favorite thing to cook? What is the one dish that you create that like you feel the most connection with? And why?
You know, honestly, for me, it's kind of interesting when I come across that question. And I think a lot of chefs may probably agree that it's one of the hardest questions to really answer because, you know, it's... as somebody that, you know, cooks on a daily basis, I think a lot of the times when the emotions are brought into place, it has to do with how you're feeling that day. I remember when I was, you know, 19 years old, I was working in Colorado Springs at this brewery called Phantom Canyon. And, you know, I would always, not only was I, you know, a teenager going through things, but like figuring out myself as a human, you know, as a young man, but at the same time working with people that were, you know, some of those guys were like twice my age, and, you know, it always felt like I was the one to pick, you know, and I felt that I fed off of that energy when somebody was like, oh, you can't cook as well as me. You're going to fall behind. I felt like that gave me so much fire to be like, watch me, you know, and out of anger, I always tell people that I'm spot on when I'm angry and I'm cooking, but, you know, that's when I was in the restaurant, you know, it's just 30 tickets on the rail and the ticket machine just doesn't stop spitting tickets and you just get more and more frustrated. But you realize that you have to keep going and that just like angers you at the same time. But, you know, you just get into this flow where you're just like, I'm upset, but I'm actually hitting every nail right on the head. And I think for me, it's more or less like how I'm feeling that day. You know, when I feel like I need to be like, if I'm in like a gentle mood, I'm like, you know what? I feel like cooking seafood today because I know it has to be something that I can't take my eyes off of it. You know, when I'm feeling very, you know, like if I want to work with my hands, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to make pasta today. And, you know, it just kind of changes with my mood and how I'm feeling that day. But one of my favorite things to make, or in general, I guess, is just like, I love making soups, man. Like that's my thing. Like I love making soups for people. I think it's so, so cool.
I really like that. I'm sorry I keep saying that, but I just can like feel your passion coming through, and it like really excites me. Because I just enjoy passionate people. And that was part of the reason, you know, Corey had recommended you to me, and you know, Corey's obviously a good friend of both of ours. And he kind of just told me like he's very passionate about what he does, and instantly I was like, yeah, let's do that. so you know, I just like appreciate all the passion and the excitement. Like you can really tell that you love what you do, just on a personal note. You know,
thank you. Yeah. And that's the thing, man. I think people need to be like passionate about what they do. I mean, to come across, you know, people that are just not necessarily happy with what they're doing on a daily basis, I think they don't really stop and think to tell themselves, I can change this. I can change the fact that I'm not happy with what I'm doing, you know? And I think for me, that's literally what it was. Like I knew it was in a part of the industry that I wasn't happy, that it wasn't giving me what I wanted. It wasn't giving me the freedom. It wasn't giving me the creativity. So I was just like, I don't want to stop cooking. I mean, I came close to just saying, you know what, fuck cooking. I never want to do this again because it's just killing my body. It's killing me emotionally, mentally. And I was just like, this is not good. But, you know, 13 years in, like, how do I make that change? I was like, do I really want to give 13 years of this profession away to just go start something new? And I knew immediately as soon as I got done having that thought, I was like, if I need cooking, I know I'm going to be back. So might as well make it work right now instead of leaving and wasting 2 years doing something absolutely different.
That's interesting that you bring that up. Yeah, because you got in very young. You said you were 14. And a lot of people would just, and I think this is very common, would just say, okay, you know, I've done this long enough. I'm over it. I'm moving on. And it sounds like there was something in you, though, you know, and I think, you know, probably passion and love of cooking had a lot to do with it. But what do you think makes you different from other people who would have just, you know, quit and moved on?
I think for me it was the fact that I wanted to generate something that was different. I've always had this, idea that it's not necessarily that I'm going to change the cooking industry, because I think that, you know, that's a large scale. But I think at the end of the day, one of the biggest things for me is just make sure that I take myself away from that industry and put myself in somebody else's shoes and say, like, if I was the one, you know, hiring this, you know, sous chef Edwin or chef de cuisine Edwin, what could I have done or what can I do to make this person happy? What can I do to make this person feel respected and feel valued? And I think that's where I'm trying to take my, this whole Catrucho concept, is that if anybody works for me, man, like they have to get paid properly. You know, they have to be respected while we work. You know, like in my kitchen, we don't yell at each other. We don't sit there screaming, because we know exactly what we're doing. You know, like whenever, you know, my sous chefs or my cooks come in, they know exactly what is expected of them. And we're just like, hey, how's it going? You know, and like, we're very respectful to one another, and we know when it's business time, and we know when it's time that we can play around and like joke, you know. But I think that's my biggest thing that I would love to do with this, is just essentially be a small cooking concept that started, you know, from a house doing pop-up dinners for people, to really be hopefully one day recognized as somebody that is making a difference in the cooking industry, and really, you know, show this big-time chef, like, hey, man, it's not okay for you to take the fact that you created a name for yourself, and now you're asking people to come and work for free. You're asking people to come and work for minimum wage, for a wage that you know is not representative of their skills. I think for me, that's one of the things that has always bothered me about cooking, is that once a chef makes a name for himself or herself, it's more or less like, okay, cool, now I have all these people that want to come and put my restaurant in, or their restaurant in, on their resume. And I feel like there's a lot of chefs that are taking advantage of that, and I don't think that's okay. I think instead of, you know, taking advantage of each other, it's like, how do we encourage each other to be, you know, to be more creative, to essentially just like keep moving ahead and making the industry a better place to work, you know?
Do you feel like the food industry has a lot of, I mean, because from the outside, you know, we would never know. I would never be able to tell any of this stuff. I've never, you know, you see like TV shows and stuff, but you never know how much of that is real. I mean, yeah. Is it pretty similar, or is it, you know, a lot different from what they show on TV? I know that's kind of a weird question, actually, as I'm thinking of it, but.
No, actually, I think it's an absolutely valuable question, because I think people, the general public thinks that whatever they see in Food Network is how it works. You know, like you see, you know, fucking Bobby Flay or Richard Blaze or like all of this, you know, all the chefs come out and, you know, be all like jolly and just like, you know, really well presented. But that is very misrepresenting of the actual industry. You know, I think is a lot harder. They don't see, you know, like, you know, when things get really, really hairy, you know.
Yeah.
At least for me, growing up in the food industry, I saw a lot of crazy things, man. Like people on drugs, you know, people just, you know, living in the streets, people like, you know, just coming from all walks of life, and somehow we all found a common ground in the food industry. And it's kind of one of those industries that really doesn't say no to anybody. You know, like you can have a record and they're like, hey, look, if you can come in and bust out some dishes, okay, we'll start you right there. If you can come in and bust out some prep, why not, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's definitely very different than what you see on TV, for sure. But I think it's a little more humane when it comes down to the actual industry. You know, this is a crazy industry, man. I can't believe I've been doing it for so long.
Was cooking different there, as far as, you know, what you... you know, you fell in love with it there in Honduras and you came here, and it sounds like the industry kind of shocked you as far as, you know, how people were treated, how, you know, chefs were towards their sous chefs and their employees, and, you know, even down to the dishwashers. Was that, you know, culturally different, or was that just, you know, across the board, the food industry? Was it like that in Honduras also, or?
And honestly, like for me, my experience, my very first experience here in the States, you know, when I literally the day that I landed from Honduras into Colorado Springs, you know, my older brother went and got me some food. So he comes back and, you know, it's this fucking fat thing rolled up in like this wax paper, and I'm like, what is this? He's like, oh, it's a burrito. And I was like, what the fuck is a burrito? I'm eating a donkey. I was like, I'm eating a little donkey. Why are these things called little donkeys? So to me, that was like such a foreign thing. And I was like, this doesn't seem like Hispanic food. But I was like, whatever. You know, so I kind of took it with an open mind. But even, you know, that was kind of like the very first thing. But then also, as I grew into the food industry, I realized that, you know, the majority of people that work in kitchens are males. And in Honduras, it's rare the time that you see a man cook. You know, it's always like women, you know, manage the kitchen. They rule in there. Like if a man steps in there, it's just like, what are you doing? Like, get out of here, you know, sort of thing. And I come here, you know, and all the cooks are guys, all the chefs are guys. And like rarely, you know, every now and then you'll run into a badass girl that can sit there and like talk just as much shit as any of the fucking guys, you know. And it's kind of interesting, the dynamic, how, you know, how having different people in a kitchen really, you know, really works. But I think for me, that was the biggest shock. It's just like realizing that, you know, it's like a man's world here in the States. And when I would go out to restaurants in Honduras, it was just, you know, it was just females. It was always a woman cooking. And I think for me, that kind of gave me a different idea about cooking, you know, because anytime when I was in Honduras, anytime I got sick, it was always my grandmother coming, you know, with the bowl of soup, or, you know, just like making sure that I was okay. So it's like, oh, and then you come here and you're like, all people in here are guys cooking, you know, so it's kind of interesting. But, you know, later on, you just kind of figure out that that's just how the industry got shaped. And, but yeah, it was definitely interesting for me to kind of see that.
Yeah, that sounds like, I mean, do you think you would have been cooking if you still lived in Honduras then? Do you think if you hadn't come over, you said you came over around 11?
And
do you think you would have been cooking at all?
I don't think so. I think if I would have stayed in Honduras, my path would have been a lot different, you know, in a lot of different ways. You know, for me, leaving Honduras was one of those things where it wasn't necessarily something that I wanted to do, but I just think that my mom at the time found it to be the best thing, you know. And our financial, you know, stability in Honduras was always like very questionable, and I think that was her biggest thing. She was like, "I need to get my kids out of Honduras because the opportunities there are non-existent." And I think for me, if I would have picked cooking in Honduras, it would have been a little tough because it's not, you know, it's not men's industry. And, you know, being a third world country, the views on what a man and a woman should do in life are very, very different. You know, they're not as open as they are here in the States. So it would have been, you know, a lot tougher just to kind of, you know, acclimate and, you know, essentially be a guy in the kitchen, you know, because it's just so, so different for them. They, you know, in Honduras, we're still on that, like, women do this, men do this. You know, at least when I left, that's what it felt like. And at that point, I was still pretty young. But, you know, I think I was pretty well aware of certain things. I was like, oh, it seems like this goes this way, and it seems like this goes that way. So I think definitely cooking probably wouldn't have been a thing that I did. It would have been more like hard labor, you know, like manual labor.
I see what you're saying.
That's probably what it would have been for me. So glad I actually ended up here in the States. It's been a blessing.
How did you end up here? You said your mom and had decided that, you know, this was the best thing for you guys. But I guess walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, and actually, this is something that I always wanted to talk about because I think people don't really realize what really drives, you know, like And mainly because I think right now the Latin community is being put in, under like such a rough spot, you know, where people are like being demonized essentially. They're just like, oh, this is a bad group of people, you know. And I think for me, being from Honduras and being proud of where I'm from, but also being very appreciative of what this, you know, what the United States has given me. Mm-hmm. I think I always like talking about, so people have an understanding that, you know, people come here because they have to. You know, nobody wants to live or leave their home country. Nobody wants to go to a place that they don't know anybody, that they don't speak the same language. It's probably like one of the hardest things that I would ever imagine anybody having to do. And I think, you know, when my mom left, I was pretty young. She actually, we just had a conversation about this maybe like 2 years ago, you know, and it's because our relationship has always been very, there's just been some gaps, you know, and I think it all has to do with, you know, with the fact that she had to make the move to the U.S. But I think I was like 3 or 4 years old when my mom left. And I just remember, you know, like talking to this woman on the phone, like as soon as I could remember things, you know, I was probably like 5 or 6. And I was like, oh, mom is on the phone. I was like, who is this woman? But yeah, so she left left undocumented from Honduras to come here, and she left myself, my older sister, and my older brother with our grandparents. And that was one of those things where, you know, I grew up not knowing my mom, so to me, my granddad and my grandma were mom and dad, you know. And mm-hmm. to this point, if I call my grandma, she gets so upset. She's like, I'm your mother. Yeah. So it's very funny to me. But I think, you know, like the fact that, you know, my mom left when I was that early. And then later on, you know, she was like, hey, I think I have everything figured out. She actually ended up getting married to somebody that she knew from Honduras, my stepdad, who actually saw me growing up and has always sort of been around, but never had a relationship with my mom until, you know, they got back together here in the States. But when I came here, it was just, I came on a visa, and my mom was just like, look, I want you guys to come because I think the U.S. is going to have a lot more opportunities. And, you know, she's like, I want you guys to have a better future. So, you know, 11 years old, getting on a plane for the first time, and I was going to shit myself. I was like, oh, fuck, this is so scary.
Do you remember?
It was super ass.
No, sorry, go ahead.
Super interesting. This was like an interesting trip. And then we landed in Houston. And I mean, in Honduras, you don't see automated, you know, toilets anywhere, you know, urinals. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, walking away, and this thing just starts like flushing water, and I freak out, and I'm just like, oh my God, what is happening? Did I break something? I was like, what is going on? So like, it was so shocking, you know, to land in a new place.
It's funny how we take those things for granted as Americans, right? Like, yeah. As, you know. I remember going back to Mexico. We used to go back every year as a kid. My whole family's from there. And like how different it was. But how, and I don't know, maybe you find this also, or, you know, maybe we have this in common, but I remember how much closer my family was down there and how much more involved they were in each other's lives, and how like they were more content. I don't want to say happier, you know, because obviously there's a lot of struggles and stuff, but they seemed more content or like grateful for what they had. And I always really appreciate that and took that, you know, to heart as a child even. Would you say culturally that's kind of, people are a little bit more disconnected here?
I would say so. And I think it's just because, you know, like the American life and the American way are so different. And, you know, at least, and I hate to generalize, because I think, you know, obviously the United States being such a vast and such a huge country, I think there is levels of poverty that sometimes they'll get put under, you know, the main light, where people are like, oh my God, like we are, you know, there are people who are starving to death. And like, you know, there are people who are not, you know, meeting their needs. And I think for me, when I see that, it like really reminds me a lot of home, because, you know, you see a lot of poverty, and you know, for a country like the U.S. to have, especially here in Denver, man, to have a homeless problem, I'm like, oh my God, like how are we the richest country, one of the richest countries in the world, but we have this, you know, half or, you know, a portion of our population is over here, like not even able to like sustain themselves. Yeah. And I think for me, that was like very, very shocking, because the way that that the U.S. was always portrayed where I'm coming from is always like, hey, like if you make it to the States, you made it. You don't have to worry about anything, you know? And for me, I think when I started experiencing a lot of different things here, I was like, oh my God, like it's a lot different than what I thought. But I think when you come from a place that doesn't have opportunities to a place that does have opportunities, I think that's when, you know, as a human, as a person, you're faced with the, you know, with the decision, do I want to make something out of nothing, you know? And like, what do I need to do to make it here? And I think that's kind of like been like one of those things that has always been like really pushing for me to kind of stay moving forward. But mm-hmm. it definitely shocked me when I came to the States. Everything was so different, you know. And to like see fast food places all over the place. I mean, I never had a fast food until I came to the States. Like in Honduras, if you go to McDonald's or like Burger King, you were like one of the rich kids, you know, like that's how different the culture is. It's crazy.
That is interesting. And going back to your point where you said that in Honduras, the view is that like, if you make it to America, like you've made it. Were you excited mm-hmm. coming here, or were you still kind of like apprehensive and scared? I mean, I know you're a child and like you're really, really young. But do you remember?
I think I was very scared. Especially okay. my very first day in school. I think it was in like fifth grade. And I had no idea like what the system was. I was like, my parents just dropped me off at this like bus stop where the school bus was going to take me on. Mm-hmm. It was more like, good luck, figure it out. I was like, oh shit.
Oh wow.
And yeah, so it was like very different. And it's funny because I met this girl, her name is Maria. And you know, every now and then her and I still like chit chat, but I literally like attached myself to this girl's hip and I was like, I'm going to figure things out. And she was like, hey, if you need anything, let me know. And, you know, we went to middle school together, or you know, we were in elementary school, middle school. Then we continued to be sort of friends in high school. And like every now and then we still like, you know, say like, hey, how's it going? How are you? That sort of thing. But for me, that was really hard, just kind of like figuring out how everything really worked here, and especially like not being able to communicate with people. I think that's the hardest thing, you know, yeah. and that was the hardest thing to really acclimate to.
I think people really take that for granted, the fact that just communication is so difficult as an immigrant. You mm-hmm. don't know the language, and people here especially, I've noticed that they kind of look at you like, well, you should, why don't you?
Yeah,
you know, not realizing they go to other countries and don't speak that language, and kind of, you know, have this weird sense of entitlement. And I'm guilty of that also, you know, mm-hmm. not that I've gone to another country and said, you should speak my language, but that, you know,
right.
I would hope I'm not that way.
But I think subconsciously, I think that's what happens with, mm-hmm. You know, with a lot of the American public, you know, when people go to, you know, if they go to Cancun, I'm sure they're like, oh, let's go to Cancun, because like the majority of people like speak English, you know, so that makes them comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really hard for people to like really switch their mentality and put themselves in somebody else's shoes. And I think for Absolutely. Me, just being an immigrant, you know, I think that's sort of been my leg up on a lot of things, especially even like running my business, you know, like when somebody's like, hey, look, I have this budget that I really can't go over. And for me, I'm just like, I know what it's like to be at a budget. And I'm like, yeah. let's see, how do we scale this so where it works out for you and it works out for me? You know, and it's always about, you know, give and take sort of thing for me. And, you know, just putting yourself in the shoes of other people that, you know, walk different walks of life. And I think that's key, to just kind of just really take yourself away from your life and put yourself in somebody else's life and see how it would feel to, you know, to live their life.
So this will be kind of a loaded question, maybe. I hope not. I'm not trying to get like political here or anything, but how have you seen America change towards immigrants over the last, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years? Have you seen like a major difference, or has it always been kind of, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but has it always been kind of, I don't know, isolating?
You know, and for me, it's kind of like a very funny thing in a sense, because, you know, considering and like looking at, you know, the American history, it's just like this country was based on immigrants, people coming from, you know, from different places of the world and being like, hey, I'm running from persecution because of my religion, or I'm coming to this new place because where I'm at, it just has nothing for me, you know, and to really look at the foundation of how the American population got built is just based on immigration, you know, from people migrating from one place to another. And I think even in the, I think the most change, or the biggest and the most drastic change that I've seen has been with, you know, in the past 2 years, I think has been really crazy, you know, when, with the last president, you know, everybody felt like they were united. They were like, oh yeah, we have an African American president. We're coming together. We're taking all the steps forward. We're, you know, we're moving as a human race, or we're moving as, you know, as a population of the United States. We're moving forward. And somehow in the last 2 years, all of that was just like crumbled. And I think, you know, the way that immigrants are being looked at right now is just, one, you know, it's really fucked up to really, you know, do certain things that politically are just barely legal. And I think that's what happens lately. People are just focused so much on the legalities of things. They're like, oh, can I put a ban on people coming from these places in the world and is it legal? They're like, yeah, we can figure loopholes to make it legal. But at the end of the day, I think what it should come down to is it like, is it humane? Is it right? Is it the right thing to do? You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the battle that I see in the United States, is bare minimum legalities and kind of figuring out where, you know, the American opinion is at, where what is the right thing to do, you know? And I think that's going to be a battle to kind of see how it plays out, because, you know, even for me, I do this thing where like I go home and I kind of watch the news, you know?
Yeah.
And lately I just said like, oh my God, what is going on? Like, and I don't know if people are, you know, noticing these things, but, you know, to have the United States Attorney General go out in public in a televised hearing and say some of the things that they're saying, I'm just like, oh my God, like this is crazy, you know, like the basics and the just like the foundations of what makes America feel like are being put to the test right now. And I don't think a lot of people really realize. They think that, oh, you know, it doesn't affect me directly, and I think that's kind of like brushing it off the shoulders. But I think, I really think people need to be more aware of what's going on, not necessarily just in the world as a whole, but like here, you know, in your own home, in your own country, is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. I 100% agree with all of that. I think people really are, they almost feel, and it seems like people feel entitled to their opinion, and everything seems very black and white. And obviously people are entitled to their own opinion, but when you make everything so black and white and there's no gray area anymore, is where there's a problem. And there's always a gray area. There always should be a gray area. There should be...
I totally agree. And I think,
yeah,
you know, sometimes to change people's minds, you have to put like the facts in front of them, mm-hmm. you know, like,
yeah.
This kind of ties back to the, you know, to the restaurant industry. Like in Denver, people are struggling so fucking hard to find cooks, to find dishwashers, to find prep cooks. And it's because, like, you know, and this is the reality of things. Even Anthony Bourdain used to talk about this. He's like, pretty much like restaurants wouldn't mind if you had like all those people from the Latin community, from minorities come in and like do this job, you know. And now what's happening is you're having kids that are coming out of culinary school, you know, and they're essentially the new workforce for the restaurant industry. And these kids are not going to work for, you know, they come out of culinary school thinking they're going to make $20 an hour. And they're thinking that they're going to be sous chefs, executive chefs right off the bat, you know. And that's kind of what's left for the restaurant industry to work with. Because, you know, for me, if I didn't have my documentation in line as an immigrant, like, I would be, like, shitting myself to go to work and be like, do I want to take that chance? I have my family here. I have kids here. Do I want to take a chance for a $90 day to really get caught up in certain things and all of a sudden, you know, just not make it back home? Like, I think that's such a dilemma. And even when it comes down to, like, farming, like, people in Florida, people in California, people, like, in Texas, they're struggling to actually harvest their crops, you know, and yeah. It's going to be hard for, you know, for any American, to be honest, to say, all right, cool, yeah, I'm going to go and pick some strawberries, some, you know, some oranges, and, yeah, I also like to get paid $15 an hour. I want to take 3 breaks, you know, a 30-minute lunch break, and then I want to take 2 15-minute breaks. You know, like, if, and I think that's one of the things that people don't realize, you know, like, if they would have just made this thing, you know, decent from the very beginning, like, this, the struggles on food wouldn't be so hard, I think, especially, you know, when it comes down to different communities that help out so much. And I think when you put those facts in front of people, like, hey, look, if we don't have this community helping us in this industry, then this is what's going to happen to your produce. You know, you're going to have $5 avocados at Whole Foods. Nobody's going to buy that.
Well, that brings up a good question for me. Is, do you see a lot of discrimination in the food industry, or, you know, have you faced discrimination yourself in the food industry?
Not in the sense of, oh, you're Hispanic, or you're, you know, your skin tone is such and such. It's more or less like, I think when people see somebody with my, you know, with my demographics,
okay,
they're like, they're talented, they work really hard, and I'm going to pay them cheaper. And I think that's discrimination, because they don't see me as, they don't, you know, if I was a white male, they would be like, oh, fuck, like, I'm really going to have to, like, negotiate my price with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, for me, I think that's the point. Like, when I came to Denver, I took a sous chef job making $33,000 a year. That is the biggest insult for anybody. The biggest insult you can give anybody. In Denver, you can't live off of $33,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for me, like, I would see certain things where, you know, I was like the first one to come into work, the last one to leave, and like the other, you know, American sous chefs, they were just like having 8-10 hour day, and I'm sitting there like working 15 hours, and I'm like, fuck this, man, like, what is this? So I think in a sense, the workload that you're given, that's sort of how you get discriminated, because they're like, oh, I know where you're coming from, I know your background, and you're willing to work more and for less. And I think that was one of the things that always bothered me.
That's so, I don't want to say, I don't know. It's hard for me to say it's disappointing, because I'm not living in any of those people's shoes. You know, I'm not living in any of the immigrants' shoes or the chefs. But I mean, it does disappoint me in the sense that people still think that that kind of behavior or that kind of thing is okay. And yeah, like you said, you can't live in Denver on $33,000. I mean, even 10 years ago, you couldn't do that. Like, that's, you know, it's just completely irrational to think that you could live in Denver for that kind of pay.
Well, that amount of money.
Yeah, no, there's no way.
And that's the thing, you know, if it was a part-time job, whatever, you know, I'm like, yeah, cool, yeah, I'll work 20 hours here, whatever. But, you know, I was putting 60, 70 hours a week. Yeah. And I was, like, I had a few days off, and one day I would literally sleep all day trying to recover. And next day I would just get, like, all my things ready for, you know, another five-day week. And it was just, you know, it was not worth it for me. And I think that's one of the things that I really want to do with my company. It's just, like, how do I find a way to not only pay people properly, but make them feel appreciated and just be the same across regardless of where you come from, you know, like, or what you look like, how tall you are, like what color of eyes you have. Like, for me, it's all even, and it's all based on merit. You know, all the guys that work with me, it's just like, cool, like, you come in, you do your stuff, you know, and like, you take care of me by like helping me be successful, and I'm going to take care of you, you know, and I'm always going to be there for you, sort of thing. And I think one of the things that I want to do, man, is just like really try to, you know, build the Latin community through food. Like, I'm talking with different people and being like, hey, look, if you have, you know, classes in a high school program where you're teaching kids how to cook, or if you have, like, you know, different groups of minorities that are interested in getting into the food industry, like, put me in touch with them. Let me show them, you know, like, let me really engrave in their minds, like, where their value as an employee and as a human are, you know, so whenever they go and negotiate their salaries or their hourly wage, they can say, no, I'm not working for less than this. You don't deserve me for less than this. And I think it's just like teaching people to like have that value within, which I think, you know, when immigrants come to the U.S., all we want to do is like feed ourselves and feed our family back home, you know, so we kind of take whatever we can get. And I think because of that, people have been able to really take advantage of that willingness to work. And I think it's time it changes. Yeah,
absolutely. I think you're doing a great job of starting that change too. And that's not just me, you know, like complimenting you for the sake of complimenting you. I really truly think, it's a beautiful thing to be able to say, I grew up this way and I had this experience and now I want to change it for you, and for you to be able to pay that forward to not just the Latin community, but, you know, immigrants in general and just the food industry in general, you know, just chefs and sous chefs and, you know, line cooks and everybody who really kind of starts from the bottom, you know. I think you're making big changes, and I really, really love that. So, and actually, you know, going back to Catrucho, what changes have you made? I think you did, you know, you absolutely talked about this a little bit, but I guess in a more generalized sense, if you ran the food industry, what changes would you make to make people value each other a lot more?
Honestly, I think this was more about focusing on the employees themselves and like being really selective on the people that you bring in to work with you. You know, and I think that's what happens in the industry. It's more like they try to get their hands on whatever sort of employees they can get their hands on. But, you know, for me, it's just like really fostering a culture and, like, you know, like essentially building this brotherhood amongst all the people that you know, that work with me. But I guess in general, it's just, you know, making the wages a little better, man. Like, really, instead of giving people, one of the things that I actually did not too long ago, probably like 5 months ago, I decided to like quit drinking. I was just like, you know what, I'm not gonna do this anymore. I've been in the food industry for so long, and I don't want to say every day because that sounds excessive, but, you know, pretty consistently, it was like we get done with a really hard service, you know, the bar manager or the owner comes out and it's like, oh, shots for everybody. And for me, I was like, oh, great. But now I'm looking back at it and I'm just like, that person, that, you know, that bar manager or that owner or whomever it was, they were just like shooting themselves in the foot by like literally feeding their employees poison, you know. And I'm not necessarily against like alcohol. I just think that for me, like, what I try to do with my guys, instead of being like, oh, here's like a bottle of booze, like, down it, it's more like, hey, look, I'm going to throw you a little extra because you killed it today, or I'm going to take you out to lunch tomorrow so we can talk about how you can be better. And I think it's like, it should be better ways of encouraging people to do a good job, and at the same time, finding ways for them to be, you know, to advance on a personal level. One of the things that I would come across a lot was I always wanted to making a goal for me, you know, as a chef in a restaurant. I was like, if I'm going to call myself the chef or the sous chef or the person in charge, I have to be better than any and all my cooks. You know, it was just like, for me to tell somebody how to grill, I got to grill better than them. If I'm going to tell somebody how to saute, I need to saute better than them. And, you know, it was always about being better. But I think for me, I never really got that from the people that were above me. It was just more like, oh, you think you're good? Well, let me find ways to put you down. And I was just like, you know, if I'm good, that means that your business is doing better because you have solid employees. And I think, you know, it's just more or less like finding ways to encourage people to grow on their own. I mean, like, it happened to me so often that I just felt like it was normal that if I told the chef that I was going to a better place, I should expect them to get upset, you know, to get pissed off to the point where they were like screaming and yelling and, you know, just like losing their shit. And for me, I was just like, if you care that much for what I do, then supposedly for me, wouldn't you want me to move on to a better place? Wouldn't you encourage me to do so? And I always came across that. I was like, this is not healthy. I was like, this person doesn't care about me. This person doesn't want to see me grow. They only care for me because I have a set of skills that allows them to meet their ends. And I think for me, that was the biggest thing that I wanted to change. Like I tell the guys that work for me, man, like, if you want to start your own business, if you want to go work for a different chef, or if you find that there's something out there better than what you're doing with me, tell me, I will help you get there. Because at the end of the day, I want them to, you know, experience things on their own and to essentially make their own path, you know, and we're going to work together as long as we can, but it's going to get to a point that they need to grow and I need to grow. Maybe I need to grow to a different person to work for me. And I think that's kind of my biggest thing, is just encouraging people to be better instead of putting them down, you know?
So how do you... I don't want this to sound like cold. I don't mean this to be cold. but how do you source your employees then? How do you, you know, select? Because it sounds like you said, you know, selection should be more prevalent in the industry, or selectiveness. How do you select your employees, and what is a successful hiring look like to you?
You know, for me, actually, it's been super interesting, and I feel like I've been very lucky and very blessed to have found the people that I work with, especially my two sous chefs right now. So one of them, I met him when I met Corey, because I used to work at this place where Corey currently works at. And it was literally one of those times where I was just like, I need to get away from the kitchen. And I was like, I don't want to be inside a kitchen. I want to experience a different side of the restaurant. So I applied to this place and they ended up, you know, having me work in front of the house. And that's how I started getting to know Corey. But I actually met this other guy, this dude, Greg, who was working in the kitchen. And to me, like, he always stood out. I was like, man, like, that person, like, really communicates better than anybody in this kitchen. He was, like, very vocal. And I was like, this person has worked in a better kitchen than this. So when I did my very first... $60 dinner at my house, I went up to him and I was like, hey man, I was like, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a chef and I'm doing this dinner at my house and I would love your help. And that was 2 years ago and he's still working with me. You know, and for me, that was like such a cool thing to see this person, you know, find that whatever I was doing, maybe, you know, lightened up some passion inside of them. And, you know, for the longest time, he's always had like a regular job at a restaurant, but whenever he comes and works for me, you know, he's like, you know, 8 hours into his day, but comes in, he's like, yeah, man, like, what can I do? Like, let me help you. Like, where are we at? You know, and like always this super positive attitude towards, you know, like working with me and having this vision. And even the other guy, this guy, Chad, who's the second sous chef that I have, and I met him at when I was working as a cook at a restaurant like 2 years ago as well. And I could see that he was like battling between staying in the food industry and just doing something different, you know? And I saw myself in that and I was like, fuck man, we are all in the same place. And started bringing him around. I was like, hey, look, come hang out with me. I'm doing this event. This might be more at your pace, more of in line with what you want to do. And the thing with him, man, he's like super talented. He's worked in San Francisco, Vail, and Hawaii, and like all these things. And I was like, there's no way that a person with this much talent should get out of the food industry. I was like, this person, Chad, just needs you know, like somebody to mold essentially a business around like the skill that he has. And for me, I was like, I'm molding a business around the skills that I have that could be beneficial to this person. I was like, I can help this person by giving them a place to work that is more in line with how they operate. And this person operates exactly how I want to operate my business. So I felt like it was really easy for me to find, or not easy, but more or less like everything just started falling into place when I found these two guys, you know. And now when I need to find cooks, I've been having like the same five cooks work with me for the past year. And it's all based on events. But, you know, one of the things that I feel very lucky about is that people have started to find Cutthrucho, and like it kind of pops up all over the place. So I have like random people call me, you know, either text me or hit me up on Instagram, on Facebook, and they're like, hey man, like, I see what you're doing. Can I talk to you about, you know, what's going on? And for me, I always bring them into my environment, and I'm like, hey, look, this is what I'm doing, and let's go from here, you know. And I always try people out. I'm like, come and have a paid stage with me. Like, I'll pay you this much. You come in. If we like each other, maybe I'll work with you down the line. Or, you know, maybe it's not for us, but I know one of the things for me is making sure that whomever comes in and works, you know, with myself and my two other guys, that we can all jive together. Because I think once you have one person in your kitchen that has slightly different views, everybody, you know, there's almost like a domino effect. Everybody starts getting, you know, getting into a different mindset. And I think, you know, just finding people that work really well with each other has been the key for me. And, you know, that's kind of, I know how everybody works, you know, so I'm like, oh, cool, this person can work better with that one. So it makes it interesting for me whenever I schedule people too, because I'm like, well, these two people will, you know, bounce ideas off of each other, and they can help one another. So it's been super interesting when it comes down to finding people to work. Out of 2 years of doing events, I this always baffles me, but never have I ever had somebody like not show up. They're always like super excited to come and work, to do something different, and to be in an industry that they love, which is cooking, but just doing it under, you know, under a different parameter, essentially.
It sounds like you're really good at finding harmony in things. It sounds like that's
I think it's super important, you know, to just have like a nice, consistent flow. You know, obviously things are not perfect, but I think, you know, at least trying to make them as perfect as possible, I think that's the goal. That's, you know, it makes it interesting.
So is there a chef or maybe even a restaurant that you admire or think is doing things right?
Dude, there's actually this guy from California. His name is Michael Voltaggio. He owns like a bunch of restaurants in California. But I think his style is pretty much like something that I sort of look up to, where, you know, it's like very playful, but at the end of the day, it's just all about flavor, you know, really well-presented food. And just like, you know, there's always a story behind everything that he does. Like, he makes this, and I actually stole this recipe from him online, but he makes this egg yolk gnocchi. And the way that he figured out that he could make this dish is because I guess he had like some egg yolk, raw egg yolk on his knife, and went and washed it with hot water. He realized that the yolk started cooking, and he was like, oh my God, like I can make a dumpling out of this. I can make gnocchi with this. He developed this egg yolk gnocchi recipe, which was nothing but egg yolks, a little bit of salt, some olive oil, and they are like some of the most amazing things I've ever had. I was like, oh my God, this guy's a fucking genius. And I love that, you know, for me to find inspiration in something so mundane as like washing your knife. I was like, that is the beauty and the essence of being creative and being a chef and being knowledgeable and being able to connect all these dots. So I follow him and I'm always like, we're going to work together. You don't know this, but we're going to work together.
I love to hear that. I believe you will. From, you know, and I guess my experience is, you know, reading about you and reading about Catrucho and hearing about you from Corey, but it sounds like you are like an extremely driven, motivated person and you know what you want. And I have no doubt in my mind, man, like you're doing big things.
And, thank you.
No, yeah, absolutely. You know, credit where it's due. And, you know, I want to ask you, I told you I'd only keep you for like an hour. We've already gone over that. But I wanted to ask you, you know, what would you want people to know about you or Catrucho, you know, that's important or that maybe people don't realize or people don't appreciate as much? What's important for them to know?
You know, I think what I would love for people to walk away whenever they, you know, whenever they have contact with any of, you know, anything that has to do with Catrucho is that, you know, it's just, Catrucho is just a way for me to be, you know, it's essentially my way of saying, like, I love what I do, I love cooking, and this is the way that I want to do it. This is my way of doing what I find that makes me happy. You know, under that, everything else follows, you know, which is just making sure that the people that work with me are appreciated, they're taken care of, you know, that they're always being challenged, that they're being pushed. But at the same time, you know, every day we get done and we say thanks to each other and we talk about, like, what could have been better, you know, like how do we come across as a better company. But at the end of the day, it's just, you know, I just want people to know that I'm just 27-year-old Honduran kid, man, just like trying to take advantage and trying to take advantage of, you know, the sacrifices that, you know, that my family, my parents, my mom especially, has made to really, you know, bring me here to the States. And I think for me, what I have to show for is just that, yeah, I just want to keep pushing and hopefully, you know, create a name for myself in the food industry. And, you know, hopefully one day, like, look back at it and say, oh man, like all the things that I talked about at Far Betterment, like they're coming true, you know. Love me, that would be beautiful. But yeah, I just want people to know that I'm just a kid, man, trying to make good food, trying to give people really good experiences, and I want to do it right. You know, I want to do it right by everyone that works with me and for me and around me. So that's what I wanted to know.
Oh, I think you're well on your way. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't want to compliment you too much, man. You know, give you a...
Oh, don't worry. Keep that coming. Exactly. It's funny because, like, people are always like, Edwin, you're so terrible about saying things when people give you a compliment. But I choose to believe it. Like, you know, and this sounds shallow and everything, but, you know, we're going to go with it. But whenever I leave my house, like, I know how I look. You know, I'm like, everything's premeditated. And whenever I do things as well, I'm like, hey, like, I did this with a purpose. So I don't, you know, I look at it as like, oh, sweet. Like, you noticed. Cool. You know, and like, I'm like, I got my point across, you know, but yeah. I'm terrible at taking compliments. And that's one of the things that I think I should work a little better on. But, you know, I think for me, like, over the years, I just developed this confidence. And it all goes back to that, you know, to those days of literally seeing people for free at my house and then, you know, slowly sort of increasing, you know, the amount that it would cost. And literally all that was for me was just me figuring out, do I have a product? Does my product sell? And do the people that buy my product like it? And I was like, fuck yes. You know, and I think from there I was like, cool, be confident, a little cocky from time to time.
No, absolutely. You should
like,
be.
You know, we got, yeah. And I think, especially in the food industry, I think that's such a, like, a chef thing, you know, to be like, oh, yeah, I'm good at this. But for me, I'm just like, cool, you know, like, I'm doing things that I find that, you know, that are very well thought out. And yeah. I put a lot of thought and definitely energy and a lot of, you know, a lot of emotion into it. So it's kind of cool seeing people really respond well to that.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me very, very happy.
I think you're in an industry, like you were saying, that, yeah, you have to have that confidence. Like, I don't want a chef coming up to me and saying, like, what do you think? Do you think this is good? Like, I want a chef to come up to me and say, try this. It's amazing. You're going to love it, you know?
Yeah, so, exactly. And it gets you excited. You're like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm going to try something amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah, and hopefully they're not, you know, worried about what they cook, and they're very sure about themselves, you know, like that's what you want. I think you're absolutely justified in having that confidence, and I think you've worked really hard to earn that, and I think that's the big thing, is that confidence is earned. It's not like you just, you know,
have it, you know.
It's not like you felt entitled.
It literally comes from sweat and tears, you know. Mm-hmm. Like 13 years and like literally about almost 10 years of just taking shit from people. And I was like, cool. I was like, I see what you're doing, but I was like, it's gotta be different, you know? And I think for me, that's where I'm at right now, where I'm like, cool. Like, I paid my dues and I paid a little too long for it. And, you know, but now I feel confident and comfortable and like very, very sure of what I'm doing, which, you know, makes it easier to really sell, you know, not only the Katrucho concept, but myself as a chef, to tell people like, hey, look, you can trust me, you know, and to have people trust me with their weddings, you know, their 500 person events. To me, that's like, I think that's the biggest compliment that I can ever get from, you know, from a guest, is just to say, yeah, like that person trusted me and I delivered for them. And that's, you know, they have like a really good opinion about who I am and what I do.
Well, I think you've got a very bright future ahead of you. And I look forward to meeting you when I'm out in Denver here in a couple of weeks. So hopefully
we can make that happen. I'd love to bring you here to Invisible City. This Corey thinks is a different kind of place, but I'm like, Corey, it's not a sex house. I swear it's not a sex house.
He would worry about that. That sounds exactly like something Corey would worry about.
It's so funny. But yeah, man, I'm looking forward to meeting you here in a few days. That would be super exciting. And we just will continue our chats.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this and taking the time out of your day. I know you're very busy.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, if you need, ever need it, I mean, I'm always open. I would love to be back on this podcast. I think it's, you know, it's super cool to just like have a conversation with someone and like talk about a lot of different points, especially things that are like relevant, you know, like right now. And like, I really think people need to be more open about talking about like politics and like really just like starting discussions and saying, hey, look, we might not agree, but like the beauty of this is that we can put our thoughts and our feelings on the table and say, this is what I think, this is what I feel, you know. And it's not about convincing people about wrong or right. It's just more or less, I think we're at a time and age where we just need to open up the conversations of, you know, sensitive subjects. And they're sensitive because people don't talk about them enough.
Yeah.
And I think it's time to like really, really talk to each other like humans and like really forget about, you know, all those other things that through our time and generation, they have boxed every single group of people, you know. And I think it's really time to just talk and like really think about what other people go through before we really put ourselves forward before anything.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think for me, thoughtfulness comes to mind, you know, just thinking before you judge somebody. I mean, it's really that simple. Putting yourself in their shoes, like you've said, you know, time and time again, having that perspective is so helpful towards the way you treat other people. And I think the scary thing about sharing your politics or sharing your opinion or, you know, discussing things or opening up those conversations is that you might be wrong, you know, and like you said, even though it shouldn't be about right and wrong, somebody might prove to you that your way of thinking is harsh or judgmental, or, you know, they might be justified in their disagreement with you. And I think that for people is really scary to have their world turned upside down like that. And I think that stops a lot of people from opening up about it. And you know, too, it's a lot easier to talk to somebody who agrees with you about everything.
Yeah.
So,
but That's the funny thing. Yeah. It's hilarious, though, because, like, for me, like, I tell my cooks and, like, you know, the people that work with me, because, like, I feel like cooking is so relevant, and it almost mirrors a lot of things in life, you know, mm-hmm. but some of the things that we come across is like, okay, so whose recipe is better? You know, and for me, I'm the kind of person that if you tell me something's better or something is good or something is whatever, I'm like, all right, cool, put the facts in front of me. And what I tell them is, you make your recipe, which is we're trying to get to the same outcome. But I'm like, I'll try my recipe. And if your recipe is better than mine, cool, we'll go with your recipe. You know, I'm okay with that. I'm okay being wrong. But I'm like, if my recipe is better, you need to just shut the fuck up for the rest and never tell me that my recipe is wrong, you know? So I give people, love giving people the opportunity to, like, take what they're talking about and, like, prove it and say, this is the product, or this is, you know, this is the outcome. And yeah. I think it's really hard to really, you know, deny facts and the truth if it's in front of you. So that, you know, for me, that kind of, like, makes it a little easier to really accept, you know, that I'm wrong. And being a chef and being, and saying, you know, essentially saying out loud that you're wrong, that's kind of like a big don't in the industry, you know. But for me, I'm just like, okay, man, like, what I'm trying to go for is for a really good product, and I don't have to be the one that makes it all the time. It could be my dishwasher that comes up with the best pasta dough recipe that I've ever seen, and if that's the case, then yeah, let's go with it. Better than mine, let's do it, you know.
I think they're going to flip it on its head, honestly. Like, I've had friends and stuff who worked in the industry, and I've always stayed away from the food industry in all capacities because of them, because they're like, it's horrible, don't work here, this is the worst thing ever, like, you know. And they've worked from, yeah, they're like, no, don't ever go into this. And they've worked from, and I've got friends who, you know, are like, I want to be a chef so bad, but it's so terrible. And they started, you know, as waiters, and then moved to line or to dishwashing, a line cook, and then sous chefs, and it, like, ruined it for them. And it sounds like you really took that to heart. So, and that's I love doing Far Betterment because of people like you. And so far, everyone I've spoken to is one of those people who likes to see other people succeed, or wants to help people, or wants to, like, help people grow, or teach them a lesson about a mistake they've made. And, like, that's the most exciting thing to me about this, is seeing people happy to help and happy to see other people succeed. And I think that takes you so much further in life to, you know, it's like,
thank you, man, because I think you really give people a platform to, you know, to come out and, like, talk about the things that, you know, that they find important. So I think, you know, you're essentially doing exactly what I do. Like, you found what you like, and now you're finding a way to, you know, to allow other people to, you know, really express themselves and, like, really do and talk about what they believe. So I think you're also doing something very, very exciting and, like, and amazing, man. So thank you. And thank you for taking the time to chat with me, too.
that means a lot, man. I appreciate it. I don't take compliments well either. But I appreciate it. Thank you.
Perfect. We're going to get along just fine. It's perfect. I love it.